welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, thanking you for being a part of those who join us right here on Progressive Radio Network. That's PRN.FM. And Dr. Zamperone and I are so happy to bring you information about natural health care, and that's ongoing. We try to bring you information that you want to hear, and one way you can help us out with that is to let us know what you would like to learn about. We have so many events as well. For instance, we have an up-and-coming podcast, which you can join in as well and get CE credits for. If you are a nurse, midwife, registered dietitian, nutritionist, acupuncturist, or massage therapist, our classes offer CE certificates that you can use towards your professional license. If you do not have a professional license, you can also join us for your own education and information and also get a certification that you took the class. So we have one coming up called Scientific Validation of Herbal Medicine, and that's online, so anyone can take that from anywhere. We have one, Adventures in Natural Nursing at New York University Nursing College, and that's on October 20th. And we have an edible and medicinal herb walk and medicine making workshop in Connecticut at Gilberti's Organic Herb Farm on October 22nd. And that's where we go out and actually gather plants and make them into medicine. If you rather do that in a southern clime, we're repeating that class in January at Hippocrates Health Institute in Florida. We also have the Naval Expo coming up. You know, the Naval Expo, we work very closely with them, and you can find them at Naval, that's N-A-V-E-L, Expo, E-X-P-O, .com. And several times a year, there are Naval Expos, both in Manhattan and Long Island at the Huntington Hilton. And this is an all-day event with speakers and booths and free samples, and yours truly, Ellen Kamai, will be a presenter at the Naval Expo on November 5th at the Huntington Hilton, and I'll be talking about herbs for sleep naturally. And then we'll be at the Gut-Brain Relationship Conference, and that's in November in Tampa, Florida. And we have a class on herbal products, marketing, legal considerations. So we have so many classes and workshops going on basically every day. We also have a lot of people taking our courses where you can become certified in herbal medicine through the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification class. And we have just a plethora of other information for you at naturalnurse.com, including articles, podcasts, books, lots and lots of information for you about how you can take care of yourself, your cells, and your family the natural way. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Joseph Bosoljevac. And I'm not completely sure if I said that right. We'll ask Dr. Joseph, but we'll tell you a little bit about him. Dr. Joseph graduated from Emporia State University with a degree in chemistry and then went to the University of Kansas School of Medicine and graduated in the top 10% of his class as a medical doctor. And this isn't yesterday, this is in 1975, so he has lots of information under his belt. He was selected for membership in the Honorary Society of Alpha Omega Alpha, and he is a board certified physician in general surgery and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons. He also got a PhD in natural medicine, which he added to all his conventional certifications, and he began a wellness practice with an emphasis on prolonging health and longevity. He's certified in age management medicine and works with Cenogenics Medical and Research Institute. He is a member of the American College of Advancement in Medicine, ACAM, and certified in chelation therapy. I'm holding in front of me a beautiful book that he authored called Surviving Cancer, the use of complementary and alternative methods in the treatment of breast cancer. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Joe.
Ellen, good morning.
Now, help me out with your last name.
Vasiljevac.
Vasiljevac. We'll call you Dr. Joe. But on the website, if that's okay, we will have links to you and your practice. And the one thing I could use a little bit more information about is Cenegenics. I know that's part of what you do. What is Cenegenics?
Cenegenics is a corporate medical practice doing a lot with hormone balancing, hormone replacement therapy. It is a little bit limited insofar as they have a certain model, and things that I do related to alternative and natural methods are outside of that model, so I have an actual practice outside of that also.
That's perfect, because you are well-versed, educated, studied, and practiced in all kinds of medicine, which I call good medicine, because there's certainly so much in conventional medicine that really is life-saving and what you want to use at particular periods within a person's life. However, natural medicine is really often proven to be safer and more effective, especially for initial interventions.
Yes, and the bottom line there, and it took me a long time to get where I'm at. It took me, I was probably halfway through a 30-year surgical career before I realized some of the things I was taught to do were not right. They weren't working. And basically the concept for me for natural medicine is basically thinking of the patient as a human machine. So you're looking at the patient, you're looking at this whole machine. You're not just looking at a gallbladder. You're not just looking at a heart. You're looking at the chemistry and the metabolism as far as what goes on in this human machine.
Yes, that's very true. That's a very holistic perspective. But, you know, surgery is still important. One of the things I've been adding with surgeons that I'm working with are simple things. Certainly there are times when surgery is necessary. But if we even use something like arnica homeopathically before and after surgery, we actually can measure a decrease in the time needed for healing and a decrease in swelling. So why not put it all together, whatever works?
Exactly. But here's what I'll tell you, Ellen, is I would say that 80% of patients out there and 80% of conventional doctors just don't get this, okay? And what you'll find are little things such as, you know, the anesthesiologist before a surgery, he'll say, "What are you taking?" "Well, I'm taking arnica." "Oh, no, stop that 2 or 3 weeks before, or it may interfere with what we're doing." That's the explanation patients are given, rather than an understanding of a more complete healing.
That's so true, and it is unfortunate, and I think it has to do really with ignorance, because anyone who's an anesthesiologist or a physician like yourself is certainly intelligent. I mean, to get to that point, you have to go through so much teaching, but it seems like then there's a closure in terms of open-mindedness and expanding the educational venue.
Some of that, Alan, also may be medical-legal, because if something would happen and the patient's taking arnica, for instance, the lawyers can jump on that. And I think that that's what scares a lot of medical doctors.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think of that, but definitely it's the case. Definitely it's the case. So if the anesthesiologist knew, and let's say there was a problem with the anesthesia or with the surgery, an attorney might bring that up as something linked to malpractice, if they didn't use standard of practice to tell the person to stop.
Right. And see, if you look at other countries, Europe, for instance, it's entirely different as far as the medical legal aspect. And I think that that makes a difference also.
Well, I mean, of course, in a lot of countries, they're linked into something we might consider socialized medicine, where, you know, the entire medical procedure is really covered under government sponsorship, both paying the physician and the facility. So I guess that takes a lot of this sort of Wild West legal parameters out of it.
Well, the other thing, too, is unfortunately what I have seen develop, because I graduated from medical school in 1975, so I've seen the pendulum swing a long ways. But, you know, I think some of what you look at also is, you know, as far as natural methods and that sort of a thing, there's a medical industry that needs to make money. And instead of doing a certain type of injection or certain types of therapy that might help a joint injury, for instance, it's easier to put them into the operating room and replace the joint.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And I love your perspective because you certainly understand surgery. You've been a board-certified surgeon so many years, but then you also went and studied natural medicine and have a PhD in natural medicine, and then you combine all of that in your practice, which is very unusual and a wonderful support to patients. Now, what is the typical patient that you see who would come for a longevity exam? What exactly is a longevity exam?
Well, longevity just means prolonging health. That's what I look at. I'm not going to tell a patient I'm going to add years, but I hope I add a lot of good quality years to what they have left. But, you know, as far as that goes, I mean, I'm not putting down conventional medicine. It serves its purpose, but it's limited. And I think true health is a balance of using a little bit of conventional medicine, a little bit of natural medicine, and balancing that out.
Well, that is really what I would call good medicine, certainly. So what would a longevity exam include that might be different from someone just visiting their conventional, you know, physician and giving them, let's say, a regular CBC and go, okay, everything's okay?
Let me give you a typical example. Patient will come to me, usually a 55-year-old male, for instance, maybe a little bit of a belly, but not much, and patients tell him, or his colleagues tell him, he looks good for his age. He tries to exercise, tries to eat right, and he'll sit down for the longevity examination, and I'll ask him, what is the state of your medical health? Oh, really good, doc. I says, okay. Are you taking any medications? Well, I take this cholesterol pill. Then they put me on this one for my blood sugar, and I take a blood pressure pill, a little heart pill, and, you know, Viagra works pretty good for me now and then. And I'll look at him, and I'll say, and you think that this is good health? And he'll say, yes, doc, on my last physical, I was told all my numbers are good. Now, I will take that a step further, because the typical male in this country at that age will be on cholesterol pill and will be having some blood sugar problems. Well, if you look at the natural aspect, cholesterol is a very important chemical in the body. It forms every cell membrane. It serves as neurotransmitters in the brain. It's used to make vitamin D. It's used to make sex hormones. What I see typically, and I'm not going by absolute numbers, I'm looking at a sweet spot for the patient. So I say if the testosterone, for instance, if the vitamin D levels are low or suboptimal, the cholesterol goes up to try to make up for that. And I see this all the time. You optimize those levels, cholesterol comes down without any medication. So what I look at is instead of looking at a high cholesterol number and you need to be on a pill, no, metabolically what's going on that your body is not responding like it did. Because when you were 35, did you take a cholesterol pill? Oh, no, doc, not at all. That's the difference.
Well, you know, now that you're bringing up, if you're talking about statin drugs, I imagine that's what you're referring to as a cholesterol pill.
They certainly
do effectively bring that number down. But how much extra health do they give someone? That's the question.
I don't see that there is any good evidence that that's really prolonging anything.
I don't either. And, of course, you know, they're constantly changing the number that you as a physician would use as a cutoff to what a high cholesterol number would be. And it's such a simplistic view, because when you look at just that cholesterol number, there are studies showing, particularly with more elderly patients, older than your 54-year-old, let's say people in their 80s and 90s who are still healthy, they almost universally have something that would be considered elevated cholesterol, but the ones who are running around playing tennis still at 92, they just don't take any medication. They just have an elevated cholesterol number.
Exactly. Well, and then you talk about what else would I offer on an exam like that. Well, basically, again, I use the concept human-machine, chemical and hormone balance, and look at all of that. And, you know, you look at other aspects, too, as far as preventive medicine, such as people get older, sometimes they'll have a so-called borderline high blood pressure. May be treated, may not be treated. And I look at that in various aspects. First of all, it could be related to stiffening of the wall of the blood vessel. The blood vessel gets stiff, and the numbers go up a little bit. Why does the blood vessel get stiff? Because of sugar abuse, diet, other dietary things. It may stiffen up because of toxicity, lead, mercury, that may not be causing any acute symptoms, can be causing subtle things such as this. And you look at the arm blood pressure, and now there are non-invasive methods where we can also measure the central pressure in the main aorta out of the heart. When looking and comparing the arm blood pressure with that one can really give you an idea of cardiovascular risk rather than just throwing
a pill. Interesting, Dr. Joe. How is that measurement taken? Is that something that requires an invasive test?
Alan. When I grew up in medical school, we were putting in all these intravascular lines and measuring pressures and things, and it kind of worked for us, you know. But there are now non-invasive measures, ultrasound and other measures that can do this without any invasive testing.
That's fantastic. Yeah, because when I grew up, too, because I graduated nursing school in 1973, right around when you were getting into your medical practice, measure an aortic pressure was a big deal.
Yes. So there's a lot of non-invasive things, and those are the things that I look at. And also the other thing that is really becoming very helpful is genetic testing. Looking at risk for degenerative conditions, for cancer risk, and basically anything that I do in my longevity exam is really a lot of data points that allow me to make a more informed decision as far as any health decisions on the patient.
So those data points are probably not ones that are considered necessarily normal values. You, as a more holistically inclined physician, might have a different interpretation, like vitamin D, which you brought up. Some of the reference ranges say, oh, anything, you know, around 30 is fine, and yet you might have a different range that you're looking at, what you would consider normal.
It's like a baseball player. You know, what is your sweet spot? In other words, this so-called normal range is not necessarily optimum for a particular patient. And the other thing is conventional medicine really changes things as far as drawing blood work. They might draw a testosterone level on a man, but what I look at is more than that. There is a hormone orchestra going on. You've got a section for thyroid. You've got a section for growth hormone. You've got a section for sex hormones, a section for the adrenal gland, okay? And when you're actually balancing chemically and hormonally a person, you know, helping that out, you're looking at all these sections playing together. So just getting a testosterone level that may be in the so-called normal range, what if the cholesterol's up? You know, does that indicate that testosterone may be suboptimal, for instance? And if you change that, how does it change these other sections in the orchestra playing?
Right, and that could be different for different individuals, as you say. That's why we need holistic physicians who are looking at a patient. But, you know, I would say from a practice management point of view, I would imagine you spend a lot more than the normal 8 minutes with a patient.
Alan, the other thing that has made me very content with my practice is I don't do insurance, because insurance doesn't allow this stuff, and there's no way I have the time to spend with the insurance company trying to justify what I'm doing. And that's part of it. My initial consultation with a patient may be 3 hours by the time we go over all the data points that have been collected, and I discuss the program with him. And in my position, to me, the word physician comes from a Greek word that means teacher, and that's what I like to think of myself. I'm being a teacher for the patient, laying it out in lay terms so that they understand what's going on. They'll make what decision they think is optimum for them at that point.
Yes, and it's so different. Like for each individual, it's not just because they have a particular number.
Exactly, exactly.
So let's revisit that patient that you have. But, you know, we have to take a little break, so now might be a good time. We'll take a break. But I wanted to, like, look at that patient, which is not just theoretical. It's probably a lot of the people who come to you, as you said. And then you get particular numbers on their baseline, other blood tests that you might be looking at, other things. And then what kind of protocol would we have for them? So we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com, and we are talking to knowledgeable physician, Dr. Joseph Basiljevic, and basically we'll have a link to him on our website and also on the archive of this show, and he is available right in Manhattan, which is great, not far from you if you're listening in the metropolitan area, and he's also the author of Surviving Cancer. We'll get to that as well, the use of complementary and alternative methods in the treatment of breast cancer. Very important discussion. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances such as cough syrups and digestive tonics contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnaminic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'd love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com. Join us in Connecticut at our last for the year herbal and medicinal medicine making workshop. We have a class online, I think it's actually tomorrow, about the scientific validation of herbal medicine. That's an important topic, and it has CEU credits along with it for nurses, midwives, massage therapists, acupuncturists, and other health professionals. And talking about health professionals, we're very fortunate to have with us today Dr. Joseph Bashil-Jabek. And he, the best way to find him, I think you can Google New York Health and Longevity. What an excellent name, New York Health and Longevity. And, of course, we will also have this show posted in our archives so that if you're listening to it and you hear something you like, you want to hear it again, or you think there's a person that might want to hear it as well, you can just listen to the show any time on our archives. And Dr. Joe is also the author of Surviving Cancer, The Use of Complementary and Alternative Methods in the Treatment of Breast Cancer. And welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Dr. Joe.
Well, thank you.
And you're coming in loud and clear. We were just talking about your typical patient. You talked about the fact that, you know, it might be, let's say, beginning to be considered a middle-aged man in his 50s. He thinks he's in great shape. You go a little different, deeper, and you find, wow, there are things that you can fine-tune while he is well before there's a breakdown in health. And perhaps also you might recommend getting him off some of the medications that it seems every single guy in their 50s is on, statins and blood pressure meds.
Yes, and this is it exactly. Is, you know, health in a way is very subtle. In other words, you can be doing things that are detrimental to your health, but any changes are so subtle, it may take 20 years or 30 years before you see an actual physical effect from that. And then you're behind in the ballgame at that point. But when you're talking about how I approach a patient for a longevity exam, we have been taught to give medications to treat numbers. But what I'm looking at is getting this patient in a state of better metabolism, hitting their sweet spot where they're just humming along with their health and their metabolism very well. Now, I will tell you this, that in my opinion, and this is one reason why spending 2 or 3 hours with a patient is so important, and that is if you take a careful history and if you do a careful physical exam, 85% of the time you've got your answer without doing any other exams. Whereas in today's picture, if you've got belly pain, you better go get a CAT scan. And someone may not even feel your belly to examine you in that regard. And, you know, just an example is people who have had a concussion, auto accident, and some head trauma. The little pituitary gland inside the skull is like a punching bag inside a little bony box. It gets beat up in there, particularly with head trauma. And as such, then, as we get older, the pituitary gland may not function well. And the pituitary gland is the one that signals all the different organs that do hormones in our body to produce the hormones as needed. So that's part of it. Besides the physical exam, I would go through, again, the blood work, but here are some other measures. When we do a sonogram of blood vessels, that's not just to look at plaque buildup. But we can actually look at the inner lining, the thickness of the inner lining, the quality of the inner lining, that can kind of give you an idea of where the patient stands as far as cardiovascular risk. And again, the data points to me are things that tell me how aggressive do we need to be about certain things. The other thing that I'll do, I'll have a patient get a DEXA scan for bone density. But, and there's this is only available, I can only find two spots in Manhattan that offer this, is doing a body composition scan. Same thing, you're laying on the table, you're getting your bone density, it can also do a body composition. It not only gives you body fat, but it gives you distribution. For instance, Android, which is belly fat, if you've got that, you've got that, that's working against your health. Many women will come in and they say, I just can't lose weight around my hips. Well, you know what? That's very typical. If you see a body composition scan where that's where the fat's collecting, that's probably an estrogen dominance or, you know, an estrogen progesterone imbalance that will that's working there. So that body composition scan is very important. The other thing the body composition scan will tell you is in pounds, what is the fat weight? What's the lean muscle mass? So say the patient comes in 3 months later and they say, Doc, I'm so frustrated I haven't lost any weight. And I'll say, okay, let's get another body composition scan. And you find that they've gained 10 pounds of muscle and lost 10 pounds of fat. They're on the right track. They haven't lost any weight, but they've improved their body composition and their metabolism's going to work better. Another thing I do is an exercise test. Not only does this give me an idea functionally of what the status of the heart and lungs are, but it also can identify this little switch point. At what point in exercise do you go from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism? That's really a key. These people that are out jogging miles, they're working an hour on the treadmill. If they don't reach that limit where they go from aerobic to anaerobic by raising their heart rate, they are not doing any effective exercise. Because flipping that little switch with, and that's basically an interval type program, helps stimulate normal hormone production. I also do a nutrition and toxin screen. I have an infrared scanner that basically the infrared ray passes into the skin, and it will reflect or absorb or whatever off of different minerals. And you can really get a good idea nutritionally how well a patient is doing by looking at tissue levels of nutrients. But this also identifies toxic heavy metals, arsenic, cadmium, mercury, lead. And in my experience, I'm from the Midwest, but here's been my experience here. In the Northeast, you'll find cadmium and mercury many times will be elevated, not causing any acute symptoms, but boy, they're certainly affecting your immune system.
And no one's looking for them, so that's fantastic if you do that.
And then, you know, that, and then another thing that I can measure very easily with just a little swab stick of the saliva is nitric oxide levels. Nitric oxide is a chemical naturally produced by the body that helps preserve the health of the lining of the blood vessel, but it also helps dilate blood vessels. Somebody with borderline high blood pressure and their nitric oxide levels are low, do they need to be on a blood pressure pill? No. Do something nutritionally to raise the nitric oxide. Blood vessels dilate a little bit. Blood pressure comes down. Boom. You're done. So those are some of the...
So what would something, what would be like a specific recommendation you would make for a patient who needs to get their nitric oxide levels up a little bit?
Well, primarily in the diet, you know, carbs are bad, or we need to cut back on carbs, most patients, and they need to increase protein intake. So a lot of times they'll be doing a protein shake and that sort of thing, and I like that because you can mix so many things in with that. And here typically is red beet powder. This is high in arginine, and it will help raise nitric oxide levels. And just mix
well, that's
it in
an
with
easy
the protein
intervention.
Thing. Yes.
So a lot of these things that you might suggest are life-changing, but they're pretty easy to institute if only someone had, you know, told someone about it, and that's where you come in.
Well, that's why I say, as a teacher, let me lay it out for the patient and let them be able to look at and understand this as far as their lifestyle. Because I'm not going to be, for me to dictate to a patient, follow all these things, it doesn't work. Every patient's going to choose from the program how far they want to go with things. And the more they understand, I think the better they're going to do.
It's true. I always try to relate to the patient as well. For instance, if you're just going to tell someone to eat healthy, you know, that's not enough information. But also, is it something they're going to be able to do? I'm just thinking of a patient similar profile to what you're describing, a gentleman who is in his 50s, and he just out and out said, look, I'm not going to cook. I only eat out. And of course, his diet, when he gave me his 3-day diet diary, it was pure junk food, like I'm sure you often see. A real SAD, standard American diet. So I just recommended that he went to a Chinese takeout. I know that's not the highest level and organic and all this, but just to get steamed vegetables and chicken. And they'll do that for you.
Exactly. Or say you do eat a hamburger. Okay, you get the hamburger, throw the bun away.
Right, exactly.
So
something that can do. Certainly having, like, let's say, an organic, farm-raised beef along with, you know, really good cabbage and various vegetables would be ideal, and that's how I eat, but it might not be available or accessible either mentally, emotionally, or physically to some patients. So telling them that really is not going to help them.
Exactly. And, you know, when patients ask me, for instance, well, Doc, I'm not supposed to eat red meat, right? No. For the most part, the red meat's fine, depending on the source. Grass-fed, you're fine. It's the other one, the corn-fed, that's high in inflammatory omega-6s that may have been given growth hormone or antibiotics or other hormones. This is the difference between the organic, grass-fed, and the typical what is available in the grocery store.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we have to meet patients where they are. You can make improvements, and you could certainly, as a physician and an educator, say, well, this would be the best goal, but okay, you can start here. Like, you're at McDonald's, maybe you shouldn't be there, but throw out the bun. So that's a huge, like, wake-up, because someone can pretty easily do that.
Well, you know, eating is, it's interesting, because you know, for instance, McDonald's French fries, everybody thinks they taste pretty darn good. Well, you know, they add a chemical in there that's one of the chemicals from nail polish that helps firm up or harden the potatoes. And I'm thinking, that doesn't sound healthy to me. The other thing, too, is the most of the oil that is used in almost any restaurant is canola oil. And canola oil was developed 30-40 years ago as a pesticide, and now we're using it to cook with, and again, it's a bad oil. So anything that's been cooked with that, it may be good food, but it's not as good because of what it's been cooked in. So all of these things are aspects that you look at, and again, how much you can change with each individual patient or to change society, you know, we're limited, but the more the patient knows, they'll be able to make a better decision for themselves.
Yes, that's true. Education is key, and that's why you even refer to yourself as an educator. So there's so much that people can do, and it's, I think really it should be standard of practice that people coming to your office get this really in-depth testing, along with some things that perhaps they've never heard about before, like the light that you're talking about, which is non-invasive, that can pinpoint heavy metal toxicity as well as, let's say, nutrient levels. That's easy to do and doesn't hurt and doesn't cause any problem just by the test alone. So that's a wonderful piece of information that they can glean, as well as your own just depth of understanding about where a patient is coming from. Now, if you're working with someone and they are on this polypharmacy of a list of almost the standard of practice drugs that almost every 50-year-old comes in with, I remember recently I went with my mom to a doctor, and she's 88 and on no meds at all. And the doctor did not believe her when they said, okay, what's your list of meds? She said, none. They actually came into the waiting room. My sister and I went in there and said, listen, your mom, you know, she's 88. Maybe she doesn't understand the question. They would not believe that she is on no meds.
That's amazing. And, you know, you were talking about that nutrition scan. I'll give you an example here. You know, for instance, one of the nutrients that we'll evaluate is chromium. And if the patient's having problems with sugar and their chromium levels are low, there is a good aspect nutrition-wise that would help the sugar metabolism. Another one that I see frequently in America is low iodine levels. And in my opinion, 50-60% of the American society is probably suboptimal on their thyroid function. Does that mean they all need to be on thyroid hormone? No, because if they've got borderline function and their iodine levels are low, hit that first, nutritionally, and get the thyroid working better in that regard without any thyroid hormone. Those are the things I look at. Or, for instance, the selenium level. If selenium levels are very, very low and a patient's got a history, family history of prostate cancer, you know what? That's something you ought to boost. And so that gives you an idea of how aggressive or what supplements can be recommended.
That's a wonderful piece of information, Dr. Joe. And we're going to go to another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can find Dr. Joe by looking at New York Health and Longevity. And his phone number there is 620-343-7043. We're going to have links to him, his email, his phone numbers, and all kinds of information available for you at the link of the archive of this show. And also, you can find lots of us at navalexpo.com. Are you going to be presenting at the Naval Expo, Dr. Joe?
I did this last summer. I think the next one's in Long Island, right?
Yeah, they come up twice a year, so people can just go ahead and check navalexpo.com to see when there is one in their area. We're going to listen to some other show promos right here on Progressive Radio Network, where you can hear the best information in natural medicine and all kinds of progressive life issues anywhere. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archive programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number, 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again, 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
Love, lust, and laughter. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Progressive Radio Network, the number one network for those who care about the truth.
And welcome back once again, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we love to have you on board all the time. You can join us for workshops. We have one on the scientific validation of botanical medicine coming up, as well as the Naval Expo, and I'll be doing a presentation at the NYU School of Nursing. That's actually free to go to, so much information. Just go to naturalnurse.com. You can click on books to see the 12 books that Dr. Zamperone and I have written. You can look at articles to see lots and lots, I mean thousands of pages of free content, which is searchable. And of course, our radio show links. And Dr. Joe's show will be there as well. And Dr. Joe Basiljevac is our guest today. And he is a physician with a lot of experience, both in conventional medicine as a surgeon, as well as a holistic physician looking at the full aspect of someone. And I imagine, you know, avoiding surgery whenever possible, but using it when necessary, which is really the best use of conventional medicine. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Joe.
Well, thank you, Ellen.
Now, you wrote this book, and we want to talk about that before we run out of time, Surviving Cancer, the Use of Complementary and Alternative Methods in the Treatment of Breast Cancer. Why, with all your knowledge, is this the book that you decided to write on this topic?
During my career, observing things with some patients really helped me change my mind, where I was able to step outside the box of the conventional medicine and what I was taught. This book is basically a gal that was one of the big influences in my career change. This gal, she presented to me, she had had a mastectomy for stage 3 breast cancer, which means it was involving the lymph nodes in the armpit. She had a mastectomy. She was sent to me because there were some lumps along that mastectomy scar after 6 months. And so, you know, my recommendation, because I was still in the middle of conventional medicine at that point, was, well, we need to do a wide excision, we need to do a skin graft, and then you need to have chemotherapy and radio and x-ray treatments. She looked at me and she said, "Doc, no more mutilation, no more burning, and no more poisoning." And I looked at her and I said, well then what are you going to do? And she goes, "Well, all my other doctors have fired me because I won't follow the recommendations, but I want to try some natural things at home, and I just need somebody to follow me." And I looked at her and says, "Donna, I don't know about all this stuff. I'll be happy to monitor you, get some interval testing to see how you're doing." And so part of my course with her was, over the years, seeing what she did and how things improved. And during this course, I would see these lesions on the chest get worse, and she'd do something and they'd get better, back and forth for a while. And then finally, when she underwent some what I call biooxidative therapy, she was having intravenous hydrogen peroxide given intravenously, these things disappeared. They went away completely. Donna today is 25 years out from her original diagnosis, and we cannot find a single sign of cancer with her. And with that, I just thought, I just need to spread this information out so people are aware that these, you know, yes, now, is this a miracle from God, or is it because the person is doing God's work by making his physical and metabolic being better?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a wonderful spiritual perspective, but what about just on the physical? Maybe it doesn't even, what if the person was an atheist? Would it work as well, you know? So
exactly.
It could just be also physical, what's going on when you use something like hydrogen peroxide and the other natural therapies that she did.
Yeah, so she was
so
a
there's
big
no way to know that, obviously. Just you noticed that it did work.
Yes.
which is, you know, unbelievable, but actually very believable if we are able to track a lot of these things. The thing that I don't really support, and unfortunately I get, and maybe you do too, perhaps you do, we get so many patients who have even palpable lumps that only want to do natural therapy, and unfortunately I have not seen good outcomes there. What has your experience been?
Well, again, it depends, because you've got to look at everything overall. You know, when I look at patients with cancer, I think of three things, Alan. Cancer loves a toxic environment. Hey, you better be looking at toxicity here. Number two, cancer loves sugar. Are you changing your diet to dramatically change that? And third, cancer hates oxygen. And a lot of things, anyway, that, so the other thing, too, is it depends on the progression of the disease, because I think a lot of patients present to alternative doctors far advanced with the disease. And
that's
they're not
true.
Going to respond. It's a matter of catching them early and getting the system changed early.
I think that's true, because very often they wait and they've done a lot of other things, or they just don't even want to talk to a doctor about it. So you're right, timing is very important as well. But your book does a beautiful job at explaining exactly what this person did and the changes that were initiated.
Yeah,
by, you know, her interventions and by you guiding her.
Well, and her teaching me, too. Let me put it that way, too. But, you know, Donna has her own story. I put that in the book. So you can actually read Donna's point of view from day to day, what went on and what she found was helpful.
Yes, that's really wonderful. And so in general, what areas would you address with a cancer patient? Would you suggest that perhaps they get at least surgery and then go into metabolic healing using all the knowledge that you have and that they might institute, but also watch and wait so that you are monitoring any change?
The unfortunate thing that I find with a lot of patients is when I suggest some things, they go back and they talk with their oncologist, and he throws his arms up in the air and he says, oh, no, no, don't do that. It'll interfere with what we're doing. And it really ties the patient's hands. They don't, you know, they need the oncology follow-up, but it's hard for them to tell the oncologist, no, I don't want to do that.
Right, that's true. That's really true. But, you know, it's always hard to tell doctors, and sometimes they dismiss you. Like my mom is an example. Like I told you, she's 88, and a physician she's seeing for something else told her, well, because she's little and doesn't weigh a lot, the woman swims 2 miles a day, let me tell you, she's in amazing shape, that she should take Beneva preventatively because she's the perfect picture of osteoporosis. This is a well woman who's swimming 2 miles a day.
Yes.
So I think that's very, very poor advice.
Well, the other thing, again, if a physician is a teacher, let me lay these things out on the table as far as cancer, the toxic environment, the sugar, the oxygen, so that you understand these things. Look at your environment and, you know, help the patient decide what they think is best for them.
Yes, so much so. And so thank you so much for all your wonderful work. We're going to be going off just in a minute here, Dr. Joseph. So can you just give sort of like ending words of wisdom and how to contact you to our listeners?
I think that the phone number is the best. The trying to think. Now, you're going to list this?
Yes, everything will be listed. All your emails and all that stuff, and the name of your place,
and update, and make sure you have the most the easiest way to get in touch with me.
Okay. And what's a closing just word of wisdom from such a knowledgeable person as yourself?
It's a matter of getting the human body functioning like it's supposed to. You know, when you're 50, you don't feel like you were when you were 15. But part of that is there's a change in the metabolism, and you need to look at how you can keep. I guess what I look at is, I shouldn't say 15, you know, but I don't see any problem taking a 50-year-old and making them feel like they're 35 again, functionally. It's just a matter of balancing the human machine.
Well, thank you so much for all your words of wisdom and for your interesting book, Surviving Cancer, the Use of Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And you can find Dr. Joseph by clicking on the links from this radio show right here and also at New York Health and Longevity. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.